Welcome to the Mojo for Musicians podcast from Manny Cabo Media, where we dig deep into today's top strategies to help you take your music career to the next level with real, raw, and uplifting conversations with industry professionals that are making moves, making a difference, and making the best versions of themselves to inspire you to do the same. What's going on, everybody? I'm your host, Manny Cabo, and welcome to another episode of Mojo for Musicians. All right, all right, all right. Welcome back, my beautiful Mojo Maniacs, to another episode of Mojo for Musicians, the source of inspiration for my beautiful ecosystem of artists. And I'm so happy you could join me because this one will certainly hit home for many of you, especially those that fear the uncertainty that change brings. But before I get into that, I also want to start off by saying thank you guys, seriously, for continuing to keep Mojo for Musicians in the top percentage of best musical podcasts in the world. And essentially, it's because of you that I can continue to do this, but more importantly, continue to inspire our world of aspiring and seasoned artists as well. So thank you. And of course, please continue to rate and review the show if you haven't already, and encourage anyone that you feel would benefit from the show to listen in. So with that being said, let's just get dirty with this episode, and I'll try to unpack this information as best as I can. So hopefully you can walk away feeling a bit bolder and more fearless with all of your artistic pursuits. So first of all, the fear of change has been deemed a phobia called metathesiophobia. That's a mouthful. And harboring this feeling of fear has many layers of detrimental effects that could lead to things like depression and panic attacks and even diminish the will to live. So yeah, it can get pretty severe, which is why I'm so adamant about people not just facing their fears, but understanding that these fears or illusions don't have to hold you back. Because I get it. Since the beginning of time, we humans love routine, and our innate predispositions have always erred on the side of resisting change. Why? Because we love control, we love patterns, we love routines, so it's natural that when something disrupts those patterns, we become apprehensive. But I'm here to tell you that it doesn't have to be that way, especially in the entertainment industry. But like I said before, I get it. I've suffered great losses over the years in this industry, shared many a tear and frustrations, but at the same time, I've gained indispensable knowledge from those hardships. And because I faced those fears gradually, I disarmed their intensity. As I mentioned in previous episodes, the recent loss of my dad created further fear of loss to the point where I was like PTSD and getting phone calls or leaving the house. But the reality is, it's just part of life losing someone. So instead of focusing on the void, I focus on the beautiful memories and the incredible wealth of knowledge and experience that my father instilled in me. And I could still hear him say, "Don't ever give up." And that alone has allowed me to persevere in this ever-changing industry. And yeah, sure, it was a terrible time of anxiety and stress and all those ill feelings and difficult emotions, but I had to be rational. And I had to stay strong for my family, understanding that life has to move on, as painful as that sounds, because my family needed that rock, you know, that rock of Gibraltar to keep all of us strong. And I began to overpower those irrational roots of fear because I kept facing them and feeling them. And it was my way of mourning because, listen, when you lose someone, you have to mourn, you know. And if not, those feelings just fester and exacerbate the fear. And that goes with every loss, whether it's a job or opportunity, whatever the case may be. You simply have to say loss or rejection is a sign for redirection and refocusing. And that's where many of us fail. And fear is certainly a natural survival instinct. Let's face it, you know, it's embedded in all of us. It's that fight or flight mechanism that gets triggered. So that's why it's so important to recognize that avoiding change is also a symptom of phobia, because you begin to nullify everything that's potentially new, and you begin to harness these comfort zones that you refuse to come out of, which is undoubtedly going to hinder any type of positive performance. I've seen this firsthand where people honestly go to great lengths to sabotage relationships. It's insane, making excuses that can destroy your social, your personal, and professional lifestyle.
I can tell you from my own personal experiences, 2020 was hell. I mean, it completely obliterated all three careers that I have as an artist. We're talking my music, because let's face it, all the shows were canceled. My tours were canceled. My residencies were canceled. All of my photography jobs were canceled because I'm an editorial music photographer. And when musicians can't play, they don't get paid. And how the hell are you going to pay for images, right? And of course, my acting. So yeah, I was hit pretty hard. And I could have easily spiraled into this rabbit hole of despair and fear. But let's be honest, that's not going to do anything. That's not going to help anything. It's going to worsen things, you know? It sure as hell is not going to help me pay the bills. So instead, I began to truly quiet my mind through meditation, self-hypnosis, where I was actually able to tackle and break down these walls of limiting beliefs that essentially I was creating, because that's pretty much what fear was doing. You know, it was fabricating these lies that in turn created a stimulus that was affecting my physical and emotional state of being. And this podcast was the pivotal point that changed everything. And it goes to show you, it's the difficult times that define and sculpt who we are. Because for me, talking about the fears that I had was extremely therapeutic, where I was able to consistently talk about my losses with my guests. And I'm talking both negative and positive outcomes, which helped me rationalize these fears and solidify the fact that they were truly just illusions trapped in my subconscious. So I needed to reprogram the what's called neuroplasticity and replace them with positive affirmations. And I know we talk about all the time. Trust me, it's not woo-woo. It helps. And so I continued to create, whether it was a new podcast episode, new music, new social media posts, new Facebook Live performances, whatever it was, to keep my forward motion thinking in order. In addition to that, I would also celebrate the little victories throughout the journey. And we as artists, and it drives me nuts, we always forget to do that because why? We're so focused on the next gig that we lose sight of the journey that we're on. And we forget the quote unquote why we started this journey in the first place, because we love it. I can tell you one thing. After losing my dad, and you want to talk about celebrating, every breath that I take, I now celebrate. And it's those little things that we all take for granted. And I soon realized I truly needed to refocus my priorities, and that was take time to smell the roses. And I know we've all heard that, but we failed to do it. So I would quiet my mind. Guess what, guys? It's been scientifically proven that the brain has over 60,000 thoughts a day. So why the hell am I going to contribute adding to this already astronomical amount of nonsense with additional disruptive thoughts and fearful ones, no less, to add insult to injury? Another important fact that I want to highlight here is this, guys. This is really serious. You don't have a mental illness, and you sure as hell don't need medication, and it's definitely not a sign of weakness to be fearful, because you're human. People, we all go through these moments, and some deal with it better than others. That's it. But I want to let you know here and today that you too can overcome this. Let's just say, call them minor roadblocks. You know, my first piece of advice is, watch your verbiage. Stop using words like, I can't, it's impossible, I can't afford that, there's no way I could do this or accomplish that. And immediately replace it with, I can. I am an incredible artist. I can afford that. Why not me? And my favorite, look yourself in the mirror, love yourself, and say this, I got this. I got this. It's that simple. Remember, the key here is repetition. It's like any other skill. The more you repeat something, the more ingrained it becomes. So instead of embracing the fear, start embracing the positivity and the abilities within you. You know, realizing that you've already overcome the most important element of life itself, which is coming into existence. Because you know how difficult it is to be born? It's like, I don't even think there's a number for the improbability, but you understand the point here. So stop focusing on the lack, because that's what you're going to get. Instead, start focusing on the gains, focus on the abundance, focus on the opportunity that change brings, because the more you reprogram your brain to think that there's always a possibility and that everything always works out for you, guess what? It will. And I can promise you that. I'm living proof. At 51, I'm still crushing it. The best years of my life are still ahead of me in an industry that ridicules anyone over 21. So let that sink in for a little bit. So guys, stop making excuses. Get off your ass because you have an incredible uniqueness to offer this world. And it's truly an injustice not to share it with all of us. There's always room for one more. And if you believe it and you can see it, then you can achieve it. And today's guest is someone who has undoubtedly mastered the art of accepting change and how to face those limiting beliefs and become adaptable in this ever-changing world that's been, what, transitioning since the beginning of time? So definitely stick around because this episode is going to set the record straight. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Mojo for Musicians podcast. To learn more about becoming a guest on the show to share your mojo with us, visit mannycabo.com and send us an email in the contact section. Also, don't forget to subscribe to this podcast on your favorite podcast app so you don't miss any future episodes. And if you like what you hear, be sure to give us a positive review on your favorite listening platform. And now, back to the show.
All right, welcome back, my beautiful Mojo Maniacs. I'm beyond excited, man. You guys are in for a treat. And I am beyond grateful that this guy was available to offer me just a little chunk out of his insane schedule. But then again, it shows you the type of guy that he is, always want to offer value. He's the editor-in-chief of Entrepreneur Magazine, has his own successful podcast, Build for Tomorrow, which I personally love because it offers such a refreshing approach to embracing the future. And God knows this world needs it right now. He's also an author with a new book on its way this summer, which will certainly be added to my library. And also an amazing and inspiring speaker who's literally made a career out of storytelling. So without further delay, let's welcome to the show the champion of change, as he's coined in the industry, Jason Pfeiffer. What's up, Jason? And welcome to Mojo for Musicians, my friend. What's good?
Thank you so much. What a generous intro. I really appreciate it.
Well, it's just facts. What are you talking about? Stop being humble because this is all about you. I can't make this stuff up, man. So thank you. I can't tell you how excited I am to have some heartfelt dialogue with you about a topic that has certainly paved my way to success in multiple stages of my life because I too have made a habit of embracing the unknown. And that could be pretty terrifying for so many people, as you already know, which actually became an impetus for me to inspire our youth of future rock stars and adults as well to face those fears and learn to adapt and be resilient because essentially everything we want is on the other side of fear, which I learned from my own experiences. And that's why I felt so compelled to have you on the show to help, let's just say, demystify those misconceptions, especially within my musical community, because there has been some serious change for some time now in the entertainment industry. And sure, not everything has been beneficial, but nonetheless, we still need to embrace the change and learn how to leverage it all to benefit our own personal brands. But anyway, we'll get to that. So first of all, tell me what you're excited about right now. What's going on in the world of Jason Pfeiffer? And I know your new book is one of them, I'm sure. And I just got to find a way to get a signed copy of that. But that's another story.
I think we can take care of that.
Talk to me, man. Tell me, share, indulge us.
Yeah, well, what am I excited about? I mean, I'm excited about the world. We're at that moment that we've been waiting for so long, right, where we are seeing things open up. We're seeing people get back out there. People have been building new things throughout, and I have been unbelievably impressed and inspired by the way that everybody, entrepreneurs included, and you know, I'm gonna use the word entrepreneur a lot probably during our conversation here. But
I wonder why.
Yeah, I know, right? Well, it comes from habit, I suppose. But I want to tell your audience because if they don't use the word entrepreneur to describe themselves, I'm still talking about you when I use the word entrepreneur, because to me, the definition of an entrepreneur is someone who makes things happen for themselves. Mm-hmm. And I think that every musician would certainly claim that to be true for themselves as well. So I have seen people make radical shifts in this past year and reconsider the impossible and discover that there was so much benefit outside of the boundaries that they had built for themselves. You know, we don't think about boundaries as a thing that we create ourselves, but oftentimes we do. We start to do something, we do it well, we find some success, and we say, okay, well, this is what I am,
right,
and this is what I can do, and this is what people expect from me. And then you start to turn everything else off. And we can't operate like that. And I think the lesson from this past year and change, and the thing that I think we need to carry forward with us, is the lesson that when you reconsider the impossible, when you take things that you said, ah, that's not going to work, that's not for me, that's too hard, whatever the case is, when you do that, you oftentimes find great opportunities for growth and to serve other people. And that's worth doing no matter whether you're in a pandemic or not.
100%. I always said that, you know, everything seems impossible until you get it done, right?
Yeah.
Dude, that's fantastic. I mean, you know what I love about you? And I got to tell you, because I've been moderating so many rooms on Clubhouse, and it's so humbling when they ask me to do these things, but it's always so cool when you just happen to sporadically drop in because you heard a topic or a discussion of interest, and you chime in just to offer value, even when your kids have their own soundtrack going on in the background, which says a lot about a person's character, because you always want to impart some knowledge or even encouraging words. So kudos to you for that. And we all appreciate it. I'm surprised your ears don't ring when you jump off, because we're all talking about you. Dude, that guy is so humble. I can't believe he just jumped in just to say hi. So that's awesome. But
oh, that's so nice to hear. I really appreciate that. I love, you know, I love connecting directly with people, and oftentimes don't have the opportunity to do it. And it's funny. I mean, you know it. You create, you put things out into the world. Oftentimes it's actually a pretty isolating experience.
Yeah.
You sit in a room with yourself, or maybe a couple other people you're in touch with, and you create a thing. And even if that thing then goes out and is consumed by hundreds of thousands to millions of people, you don't see them do it, and you don't often hear from them. And so it is like you just put it out into a void. And so sometimes the coolest thing is actually not producing something for a million people. It's actually just talking to a bunch of people who can talk right back at you.
I agree. It's those smaller audiences. Even if you want to compare it to a performance, I love those small, intimate audiences. You feel like you connect so much more. Not that I don't love performing in front of 60,000 people. That's always good too, but it's just a different type of energy, and you feel like you connect wholeheartedly. And I know, because I've seen some of your specials and your stage performances, and it's brilliant. But then again, someone like you can connect with any audience. So let's not be too humble here. But listen, I only have a half hour. I only have a half hour with you. So I want to squeeze in some really strategic questions that I know will certainly serve my community of artists out there. So my first question has to do with adaptability, right? Yeah. Now, I worked for Apple for so many years, and I realized that the advent of technology offers great advantages, but also creates this, this tension and angst among society, specifically the older generation. But also for those that have fallen into, let's say, a comfort zone with respect to implementing technology that they've perhaps, labored to understand in the first place. And now they're at a point that they're comfortable with it to apply it. And now here comes a wave of new updates or protocols, these beautiful esoteric things called algorithms and NFTs. And so now they're back to this initial state of overwhelming. So, and this is to point out the fact that the music industry, we heavily rely on social media, but it seems to be ever changing. So what advice would you give my ecosystem of artists out there with respect to embracing all of these nuances and changes, innovations, transitions, whatever you want to call them?
It's a great question. I'm going to tell you a story. A story set in the music industry.
Sure.
So perfect. Okay. The phonograph, the first record player comes out. What are we talking about? 100 years ago?
Yeah,
and it is revolutionary.
Right.
In a way that I don't think we can really appreciate right now. Because consider it, before the phonograph, before the advent of recorded music technology, the only time that you could hear music was if somebody was performing it in front of you. That's throughout human history, right?
Of course.
Human history. From cavemen up until the time in which somebody invented the photograph, that was the truth. You could only hear it if it was performed in front of you. And then suddenly that changed. And that was a terrifying experience for the musicians of the time.
Right.
Absolutely terrifying. They hated this thing. John Philip Sousa really took up the charge. John Philip Sousa, maybe your listeners know, maybe not. He is the composer of all the marches that
very familiar.
John Philip Sousa. Yeah. So anyway, this guy despised the phonograph, and he wrote all these really fascinating things about it. My favorite argument of his against the phonograph goes like this. When you bring recorded music technology into the home, it will replace all forms of live music, which is to say nobody will ever perform music in your home and nobody will sing. Mm. And because of that, mothers will no longer sing to their children. Mm. Because, of course, why would they do that now that they have a machine that can do it? And because children grow up imitating their mothers, the children will now grow up to imitate the machine. And thus we will have created a generation of machine babies. And this was a core part. This is sounds silly, but it's really a core part of a vision that the people of that time had, which was this thing is coming in and the only thing that it can create is loss.
Right.
That's it, right? Loss is the full experience of the phonograph. And that, of course, is not true. The problem that we often have with change is that we see loss and we don't see gain. The loss is easy to identify. I used to do this, now I may not do that. And then we extrapolate out the loss and we think that the new thing is going to replace wholesale all the old stuff. And so everything that you knew and everything that you valued is now going into the garbage. But that's not true. You know it, and your entire audience knows what happened thanks to the phonograph. What happened was a creation of an entirely new music industry.
Sure.
I mean, if there's a studio engineer listening to this right now, your job exists thanks to that new technology.
Exactly.
And so when we think and see these new things, yes, it will initially look like loss. It will, because it's coming in and it's challenging the thing that we feel like we know. But I am telling you that it continues to. The history of innovation and the history of the music industry is that new things come along and they create growth in ways that we can't even possibly anticipate. And so I think that the opportunity here for everybody is to always be thinking, what can I build from this? How can I be a part of the future here? Not what am I going to lose, but how is this additive to me? How can I gain? Because I guarantee you it's there. It's not going to be easy to find, but it's there.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I was a photographer in my life. Look at the thought process. And this is what killed Kodak after so many years. You know, they knew that they were in trouble, but yet they tried the same things and same things. They didn't want to embrace the change and the things that just didn't work. And they were just completely wiped off the mat with the advent of the digital image, which has proliferated. And look how many doors opened up, especially for photographers. So I get your point. It resonates perfectly. You have to adapt to the change because there's always an opportunity. And, you know, you have to look at that glass half full instead of half empty, because we all have those similar fears. That's brilliant. Fantastic. Question number two. Now,
sure,
I resonate with everything that you say, obviously, because I've embraced my failures. And you know what? I hate that word, by the way, because they're really not failures. They're more like, I don't know, test results that are necessary, because you have to fail because that's the only way to track your progress. And more importantly, conclude that, you know, what works and what doesn't. Mm-hmm. And when you resist that need to overcome defeat, then it's only going to preclude you from achieving the level of success that you desire and can accomplish. So with that being said, my question to you is, because you're so animated and passionate about embracing the resilience to accept change, was there a moment in time where something drastic occurred that led you to have such a powerful mindset about change? Because I know for me, I became really adamant about inspiring out of those frustrating and challenging moments full of failures. So I'm just curious as to how you became so purposeful about embracing change, because I see so many artists quit and abandon their dreams because they were so scared to adapt or too overwhelmed with the thought of failing. And I'll use one of your favorite quotes, by the way, because I read a lot of your stuff extensively.
Thank you.
And one of your favorite quotes from Malcolm Gladwell, which totally highlights the point I'm trying to make: self-conceptions are dangerously limiting. Dude, that hit home. That hit home
powerfully
for me, because
yeah,
that in a nutshell describes everything that I just long-windedly just explained. So talk to me. Was there a moment in your life, like, I don't know, an epiphanic moment perhaps?
Oh, that's such a good question. And boy, I really appreciate the kind of deepness at which you know my work to know that Malcolm Gladwell quote. I use that all the time.
I just like it when people uphold what I've been trying to say. It's like, what am I? I'm just a ball guy in a microphone, but deep down inside, I want to help you. And these are the things that I acquired from people like yourself that I try to proliferate out into my audience, but they just don't listen. And it's so frustrating.
Yeah, right.
Go ahead.
Right. Well, there's also a big difference between listening and really feeling it.
Right.
You know, I mean, you can hear these things,
sure,
but actually sinking in and internalizing them is something totally different. So, I mean, look, you ask a great question. There, I people should know my starting point. And my starting point was that I was not comfortable with change at all. I mean, my parents think it's hilarious that this is what I talk about all the time now, because like I was the kid who refused to, I mean, I used my like childhood blankie until college.
I'm right
I mean,
there I with just, you, man.
I refused to do anything. Every new thing I hated. I mean, for musicians, I was the guy who liked everyone's first album and then thought everything else was terrible. Like I was that guy. Man. And it wasn't one singular moment that shifted me, but what I discovered along the way in my own career was that every time I let go of one conception of who I am and what I can do,
right,
I gained something. My career grew bigger. And the most recent version of that was when I took over Entrepreneur Magazine, which at this point was 5-something years ago. And then people started talking to me in a way that they hadn't before. I was a newspaper reporter and then I was a magazine editor. And I did this and that other random stuff, but I nobody had ever wanted to interview me. And nobody ever saw me as somebody who had anything to say. And I didn't know that I did have anything to say. And then suddenly I took this job and I start getting interview requests. And I start to say yes to them. And here's how they always go. They start out, "We've got Jason Pfeiffer here, and he's a thought leader in entrepreneurship. We're so excited." And that made me so nervous. And I thought, I don't know that I'm that. And so I would try to reel it in. I'd say, "Well, I think of myself as a journalist, and I'm a generalist, really." Right. And I, you know, and whatever. I was like killing the reason that I was on these people's show. And so then they would have to course correct. "Well, we think of you as a thought leader." And after a while, I tell my wife this problem. And she says the words that really set me down the path that I am on now, which is that she says, "If they want you to be a thought leader, then be a thought leader." And what I realized was that being a thought leader, the difference between being a thought leader and not being a thought leader is that a thought leader is just willing to say that they're a thought leader. And that's really the only thing.
Sure.
And
I get it.
That I had the ability, if I wanted to step into a role that was now being asked of me that I didn't feel prepared for. And I didn't really know what was on the other side of that role. But if I was willing to set aside my discomfort and figure out what it meant to succeed in this role, which is, goes beyond just saying, "All right, well, now I'm a thought leader," right? Like, okay, what the hell am I a thought leader about? What do I talk about? What are my ideas?
Right. Now I got to come up with stuff.
Who's my audience? Yeah. Right. I have to have a whole set list here.
Right.
And so I set about the very arduous and uncomfortable task of figuring this out. And this meant a lot of different things, right? It meant putting myself on stage in front of an audience when I felt like I had absolutely nothing to deliver to them. It meant going on television and speaking in a way that I did not feel qualified to speak about. And it meant having many, many, many conversations with people in which I listened and I was humble and I thought, how can I be of value to them? And I'll just give you one, because this was a years long process, and you know, it's a lot to squeeze into just a few minutes of talking here, but I will tell you one.
No, please indulge us. You're the one that's got to go, man, but I'll take every bit of information you give me.
I appreciate that. I wish, you know, the problem with having like ridiculous days is that you, of course, want to spend like all day just talking to every person
of
you talk
course,
to.
And, I get it.
It's like, man, I hate it. Like, I just is there like not an invention that just doubles my hours? I guess not yet. So, I'll tell you the one thing that was one of the key insights that I had early on. And that was, I started to realize that the questions that people were asking me were not just questions. The questions that people were asking me, you know, whenever I'm talking to, so having a casual conversation with somebody at an event, whatever the case is, the questions that they're asking me are actually them telling me what they think my value is to them. And the more that I could focus on what the pattern was, what questions am I being asked, the more I understood more broadly what my relevance is to people.
Right.
You understand me in some way, or you understand how I fit into your world in some way. And I don't think I understand that. So you tell me. And then I'm going to go back and I'm going to figure out how to fulfill the thing that you're looking for. And so when people started asking, I realized that the thing people were asking me more than anything else was, what are the qualities of a successful entrepreneur? That's what they wanted to know.
Sure.
And I started to think, well, what's the answer to that question? And the answer I realized was adaptability. And the more that I could understand adaptability and the more that I could see it in other people and understand how I did it myself, the more I might actually have something for people and something that I believe in, not just I'm not playing some role here, but and that's the origin of the person that you're talking to today. I didn't have to do this, but I saw that there was an opportunity and I didn't know what was on the other side of it, but I was pretty damn sure that it was big and transformative and that I would regret not figuring it out.
That's genius, man. I love it. And you know, that's a great segue into question number three, because it's true. You know, again, it just upholds what I've been saying. Everything that we want is on the other side of uncertainty and fear. And you'd be surprised the ROI in that. And just by taking the risk, I've always been a big risk taker. That's just me, you know, totally opposite too of my parents, which I guess why there's this great relationship there, you know, but you know, we could talk about that for hours. So I'm going to jump right into question number three, because I feel this is going to resonate with you, especially after what you just said. So it's a two-part question, but I'll make it really quick. Now, I personally, myself, I made a career as a vocalist from feeling, you know, uncomfortable, or rather feeling comfortable in those uncomfortable situations.
Yeah.
And I learned this during my journeys on TV shows like The Voice and La Voz, where there was limited time to rehearse. Stepping into moments of uncertainty was again, a commonplace. And yeah, you know, the whole performing in front of 14 million people worldwide, you know, that kind of hits you at the last second and disrupts your focus. And that doesn't help. But at the same time, it's those moments that I live for, because those difficult moments have defined who I've become as an artist, an educator, and even now as a podcaster, and you as an editor, of course. So it's all relative. So my question to you is, what was the most disruptive situation that you were faced with that you overcame, or how did you overcome it, if in fact you did? And part two of that, what would you recommend to my audience of aspiring artists with respect to embracing those uncomfortable moments, especially early on in this, you know, ever-changing career that we call entertainment? Because apparently it is a commonplace to continuously be embracing change on all levels, which can be overwhelming and even scary for some, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Great, great questions. And by the way, you didn't ask this, but when you were just describing there, not having a lot of practice time and then having to perform for thousands or millions of people.
Yeah.
What flashed into my mind was a really interesting conversation I had with a friend named Clint Carter, who I've known through magazine editing for a very long time, and who goes on the Today Show quite a lot to talk about this or that. He does a lot of product stuff.
Right.
And I was watching one segment, and it was just, he just killed it. And I emailed him and I said, how did you do that? Like, what, you're so comfortable and you've got so much information in your head. How are you doing that? And he said that it took him a long time to figure this out. But the answer is that when it's game time, you have to think to yourself, the work is already done. Like, this is not the work.
Okay.
What's coming next is not the work. What's coming next is the fun. Okay. The work is already done. The work was all the prep that I put into it. And if I didn't have enough time to prep, well, then it's all the stuff that I did throughout my career that got me to be able to be in this moment anyway.
Leading up to this point. Gotcha.
Leading up to this. Like, the work has been done. You know, people oftentimes, I think that they're afraid that, you know, when the camera starts rolling or when the, you know, the light hits them on the stage, like, now is the work time and now I got to perform. No, man, like, you already did the work. You did the work, and that's why you're there. And it was a really powerful way of thinking about it. So anyway, I just wanted to share that.
That's brilliant. Absolutely.
Was there a moment for me? I mean, look, I've had so many. You asked about a disruptive moment. I mean, my very first disruptive moment was that I took the small town newspaper job. I hated it. I didn't know how to get out of it. I didn't know what else I could do. I felt like I was made for bigger things, but there were no avenues to get there. And then my only friend at the office quit, and then I had nothing. Ugh. And that is when I realized that I'm sitting around here feeling sour and saying to myself, I could work for the New York Times, the Washington Post, or whatever, right? Like, I could work at this really high level, but nobody at the New York Times or the Washington Post ever, ever was going to call me and say, kid, read that story that you wrote about the local diner, right. bringing you up to the big leagues, right? It was never going to happen. Right. And so what was I doing sitting there being grumpy about it? I had to go to them. Like, I can't sit around waiting for people to come to me. I have to go to them. And so that's what I did. I quit the job. And I sat in my bedroom in Holden, Massachusetts, literally next to a graveyard. I was like sharing it with a couple friends. My rent was $500. It was a dump of a place. And I just started cold pitching. I was like, I'm going to go to them. And I did it. It took months.
Right.
I got a piece in the Washington Post. I got a piece in the Boston Globe. I got a number of other ones. And I started to prove to other people and to myself that I could work at this level. And that had a profound impact on, one, my ability to convince other people that I should work with them, right? It's like the first one's the hardest. And then also just to convince myself that I was doing something right here. And the thing that I was doing right was not sitting around at some job and just having it, but was figuring out proactive ways to go and get myself in front of people. Mm. And I've been doing that ever since. It was just a mind shift, you know? I just can't trust the rest of the world to recognize me. I gotta go recognize me and then go get it in front of everybody else. So, you know, what's my advice? I mean, to part two of your question, what's my advice to people who feel like they are halted by some kind of change, right, or whatever? I mean, look, the answer is going to be, it's easier to say than to do, quite obviously. But look, if you stop moving, the literal only thing that happens is that you stand still and everyone else passes you by. Right. It's the only answer, right? And
absolutely.
When you look at the careers of people who have had great success, what you found is that even though it may not seem it, because you're only seeing the tip of the iceberg, they have had to shift so many times.
Absolutely.
And they've had to adapt so many times. And you know, you had mentioned how failure is really kind of a terrible word for something not working out, and you're absolutely right, because failure, when put in a continuum, is just a piece of data.
Right.
And the really successful people have internalized that, or they've just been able to keep going. And that is the only thing that you can do. I have no secret words for you. I have no buttons that you can press. The only thing that you can do is to
move forward. Yeah.
To constantly remember and try to contextualize that you are in a continuum.
Right.
And there are things that have come before and there are things to come. And you have control over the things to come. And you probably have a lot more insight than you think you do. And that the moments in which you felt were failures were actually really instructive lessons that probably gave you some insight that other people don't have, and that you're able to utilize in a way to go forward. And that is the only thing you can do. You cannot, I guess, jot this down and slap it on your wall. The future is not optional. You just can't opt out of it.
Love it. Right.
And so the only thing you can do is be part of it.
Plus, you don't want to live in regret, too. That's the worst. That's my biggest fear. You know, shoulda, woulda, coulda. That's not going to be me at 90. That's why I try to, at least, even if I fail, you know, I want to at least say, I tried. Didn't work out.
At least you did it. Right.
Right. You know, absolutely. Well, listen, this is my last question. I've got, 4 minutes left? And you know, okay. I love this crunch time. This is again, that uncomfortable zone where I got to hurry the hell up. So finally, this is my signature question of the show.
I love it. I love a signature question.
Yeah, my signature question of the show, which is one of my favorites because it allows me to tap into, you know, the great minds like yourself of why you all do the things that you do and why you've accomplished so much that has allowed me personally to create, I don't know, a template of mindset, which is, you know, what's your mojo? You know, what's your mojo in continuously wanting to engage with your audiences about change and being resilient, even if those uncomfortable moments arise? Because it's so gratifying for me when I watch you speak on stages in your videos, because you truly are, man. I got to tell you, you are the, people say I'm rowdy, but you're a poster boy of a passionate orator. So what's the secret sauce in your drive, man? Because as I said it before, I want to bottle that up, sell it, and perhaps maybe then I'll be featured on the front cover of Entrepreneur magazine. So indulge me, man.
Oh, man, that's a really good question. I mean, I didn't talk like this for the majority of my career, right? I'm what you're seeing is the product of me, as I described earlier, of me trying my absolute best to understand how I could be useful to people. And I think that when you find something that is at that intersection of stuff that you believe in and also stuff that you feel is a massive opportunity, that you get really excited. And then I have always been attracted not to like great art or whatever, but instead to art and to other performances and sure. to things that show me that the boundaries are not where I thought they were. Mm. And so I remember moments like seeing John Taffer on stage. If you know John Taffer from Bar Rescue, who I'm fortunate to have become friends with since I saw him on stage. But I watched that guy and he is screaming and he's like, sweat is pouring from his face as he's talking on stage. And I remember sitting there and thinking, oh my gosh, I think that I'm doing like loud, but I actually could turn it way up and not be seen as insane because I'm experiencing this and I'm loving it. And that means that there is like more, there's more to go here. The boundaries are not where I think that they are. And seeing that kind of stuff and then trying to rise to the level of it and not doing somebody else's bit,
right.
but instead just figuring out like, what is the best way that I can serve my ideas and the people who I want to help. And is there a way that I can do that bigger and better and more intense in ways that are going to land with them? And I just keep pushing it forward. And what I found is that look, the way that I'm talking to you right now is not the way that we would talk if we were having lunch. It's too much.
Yeah,
but
I feel your passion. I feel like you can't teach that. It's got to come out from somewhere. So it makes perfect sense what you're saying.
It's experimentation. Experimentation.
Right.
That's what it is. It's saying, hey, if I push it this far, what do people do? They love it. Can I push it further? Mm. They love it. Can I push it further? They love it. And that the more I do it, the more natural it feels. And the more that I feel like I've locked into something that is genuinely me, that takes time.
Sure.
And that's a kind of change in and of itself. How do I speak? How do I relate to people? Is there a way that I could do that better? It's not an act. I'm not BSing, but what I am doing is I'm trying to calibrate what is the best version of me that leads to the best results for other people. And then I'm going to live whatever that is.
Love it. Oh man, I love it. I know we're out of time, but listen, I'm beyond honored and super grateful for your time today and helping me understand the workings of that brain of yours. And on behalf of my audience and incredible artists out there, I'm wholeheartedly thanking you for this incredible half hour of diamonds of knowledge that you've dropped on us. So thank you for that, my friend. I wish you, nothing but continued success. And I'm so looking forward, by the way, to your book. And yes, I clicked the be alerted when it's out button, on your site.
Nice.
Yeah, man. So I'm all over it. But before you go, please let us know how we can find you to learn more about you and subscribe to anything that you're working on, any projects that you have coming up, and so on and so forth.
Oh, well, thank you so much. I'm honored to be here, and I'm honored by the attention that you've given my work. I'll keep it nice and easy. You had mentioned earlier Build for Tomorrow, my podcast. I'd love for people to check that out. Actually, that story that I told about John Philip Sousa came out of some research from an episode about recorded music for Build for Tomorrow.
Right.
So you can check that out. Also, what you referenced there with the button is if you go to my website, jasonpfeiffer.com, you can find a whole bunch of things, but I will tell you the first thing that you should do is you'll see a button, you can't miss it, I promise, called free training. And that will give you a free audio course that I put together about how to feel more adaptable. And then once you get that, you'll also be signed up for my newsletter where you can get all sorts of info. And my book is coming out. Although, man, you said, perhaps mistakenly, you said that it's coming out this summer. That would give me a heart attack because I'm still working on it. It comes out next summer.
Oh, okay. But I was under the impression it said, out there 2021. Okay.
No, does it say 2021? We got to change that.
I think it says summer 2021. That's what I thought it said.
Double check. All right, well, we got to fix that now.
That's just me in anticipation again. That's me and being eager about it.
I got to turn. I'm turning it in at the end of July. So if it comes out now, then we are in trouble. Okay. So anyway, you can check that. But Build for Tomorrow and jasonpfeiffer.com are great places to go.
That's awesome, brother. Thank you again. And make sure you tell Jennifer and the little ones. Thank you for letting us share you. And I wish you continued success in all your pursuits, man, because you surely deserve it. And thank you for what you do for this world of future entrepreneurs, man, and sharing your knowledge with my
Well, thank you. And the same back to you. And thank you for everything you're doing for your community. It's fantastic. And it's just such a great time talking to you.
Thanks so much, man. Listen, have an amazing week. Much love.
You too. Take care.
This has been a Mojo for Musicians podcast. If you're a musician, producer, engineer, or any other industry professional wanting to share your mojo and stories of success with our listeners, or just want to share some feedback on today's episode, we'd love to hear from you. So just send us an email at info@mannycabo.com. Thanks for listening.